Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You are tuned in to another edition of Americana Music Profiles, brought to you by Americana Rhythm Music Magazine and AmericanaMusicMagazine.com. I'm your host, Greg Tutwiler. Let's jump right in to the next exciting interview. Jerry Salley is considered one of Music Row's greatest veteran tunesmiths. While penning many songs for many other artists in the bluegrass and country genre, he has also recorded several CDs of his own, including this new number 6 project called Bridges and Back Roads. Jerry joins me in this edition of Americana Music Profiles as we talk about his life in music and this new CD. Good morning, Jerry. Welcome to the podcast today.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. I certainly enjoy this opportunity, and I'm looking forward to learning about the new record.
Yes, sir. I appreciate the opportunity as well.
So you've got a new, is this number 6 for you? Is that right?
This is number 6 for me. This is actually my fifth. You're right. New Songs, Old Friends was on Mountain Home, and since then I've been doing my own little record label. So yes, sir, that's exactly right. It's this one. Six solo projects.
Okay. And you got to work with a lot of friends and neat people in the business for this record. Is that typical for you to work with different artists, or is this something unique for this project?
No, I have my very first solo project back around 2007 was an album called New Songs, Old Friends. And, I've mainly been a songwriter. Well, I am a songwriter, but I've made my living just writing songs, and I've never really pursued the artist side of it. I did when I first moved to Nashville in the 80s. I had a couple of deals, one at RCA and one at CBS Records back in the day when it was called CBS. And we had these deals where they would find you and let you cut 3 or 4 songs to decide whether they wanted to put anything out or not. So I did pursue a country artist career at one time. Back then, and the second one didn't work out. I was already making pretty decent money as a songwriter, and it was just driving me crazy and depressing me too much to try that and leave it. So fast forward, I got older, my kids were growing up, and I started recording some songs and solo albums. And that first one, New Songs, Old Friends, I had different artists on each cut. They were guests.
Okay.
And they were all folks who recorded my songs in the past. And I had folks on there like the Oak Ridge Boys, the Little Whirly, Sonya Isaac, Del McCurry, Ron DaVincent, Vince Gill. We had a different guest on every cut. So that was my first solo record. And since then, and I'm just good friends with a lot of different folks, and since then, I haven't really done multi-artist projects on my solo record, but I have reached out to a few of them to sing background and do duets and that sort of thing.
Did you write songs specifically for this record, or are these songs that you had already had put together?
Well, both. Let's see how many new songs there's. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I have 6 new songs on the project, and then I have several that I always thought would have been hits had I got them recorded back in the country days when country music was really traditional.
Right.
And, of course, I'm not going to get those songs recorded these days, so I've made bluegrass arrangements and decided I just thought they were good, solid, lyrically, melodically, just really strong songs that would have been a hit back in the day. And so I took those songs, and they're ones like the first song to Let Me Be the Bridge, for instance. That song's nearly 30 years old.
Wow.
And so I took that and about 3 or 4 other songs that I've always believed in with all my heart and recorded those as well. But although they're old songs, some of them have never been recorded before.
That makes sense. With so many songs in your catalog, how do you settle on just 12?
Well, that's a good question. I don't always do a great job of this, but I try to kind of get a theme for the album or for the project and either write songs toward that theme or gather songs that I've written in the past that have either been hit for others or that have never been recorded. The project before this one was a re-release of some of my original gospel things with about 4 new gospel songs, and the new album before that was all new songs, 12 all new songs. But that's a good question. I just kind of have to narrow it down to what I think works.
Yeah.
On a particular thing, you know.
Are you, when you put a record together, are you thinking ahead far enough that you think, well, I'll record this one on this project and save this song for the next one?
Yes, sir. I actually do that.
Okay.
At my age, I don't know how many more I'm going to get out, but I'm already working on, I have 5 songs finished for the next project already.
Wow.
That I know for sure that I want to do. I'm always thinking ahead. I'm also thinking about doing a Christmas record. I've had probably 20 or 22 original Christmas songs over my career that have been recorded by other folks like Gordon Mode and the Oak Ridge Boys and Jeff and Sherry Easter, a bunch of folks. And I've never recorded a Christmas record or any of those. So my kids are like, Dad, why don't you do a Christmas record? We can just always have it. So
yeah.
I'm thinking about going in as well and recording in addition to a new solo record to have out in a couple of years. It takes me a long time to do anything. So I have to get started now for something for 2022.
Oh, okay.
So I'm thinking ahead and I'm trying to put together things like that for the future. Absolutely.
Do you have a favorite one on this current project?
Oh wow, that's a great question. I like asking which one of my kids I like.
Yeah, right.
I don't know that I have a particular favorite for any reason. There's a song on here. There's 2 songs on here that mean a lot to me personally. One is a song called "Waltz Through the Ages," and I co-wrote that with my dear friend and mentor, Jim Rushing, which I also wrote "Let Me Be the Dick" with Jim, and I've got a great story about that song. I'll tell you in a few minutes. But we also wrote a song on this album called "Waltz Through the Ages." And that particular song was played and sung at my wedding a few years ago.
Okay.
And it was the first, it was the song that Aaron and I, we had our first dance to that particular song.
So cool.
That song has meant a lot to both of us. And on this record, I always thought it might make a great duet, so I had it reached out and asked Rhonda Vincent, one of the newest members of the Grand Ole Opry, and
yeah,
a friend of mine for 20 years, and we've been known each other since we were young. And she was kind enough to record a duet with me on that particular song, so that's a very special cut on the record for me. And then there's one called, I wrote this with another dear friend, Larry Portal. Larry, wrote Highway 40 Blues,
right,
and a great songwriter.
Yeah.
We've been performing together and writing together for over 30 years now. But we have a song on here that we wrote several years ago that has always meant the world to me. The lyrics are just some of my favorite. The chorus is one of my favorite choruses I've ever been a part of. And the song is called "How I Want to Be Remembered." And I've never recorded it. It's never been recorded by anyone else. And I guess I just turned 60 this year. So you start thinking about those kind of things. I think the older you get, the more important those things are. So that one means an awful lot to me.
And you mentioned the first single, "Let Me Be the Bridge."
Mm-hmm.
And you said that there was a story about that one.
Yeah, back in the early 1980s, I was writing for a small independent publishing company, and I was really, it was right where I actually signed with Warner Chappell right after this, but I was a big fan of Jim Rushing. Jim was already having a big career, and had written a big hit when we were down to nothing sure looked good on you for Gene Watson. I'm not a huge Gene Watson fan. And I just was aware of Jim's songwriting and was a very, very big fan. So I felt begging my publishers to try to help me get an appointment to write with them. So I finally got an appointment, and my publisher told me, he said, he's gonna take a chance and, let you in the room and see what you come up with, but you need to take him a great idea, because I'm telling you right now, if you don't bring him a great idea, he's probably never gonna write with you again.
Wow.
Of course, that didn't put any pressure on me whatsoever.
No, not at all.
But a couple of weeks before we got together, God just kind of threw down a title to me, and I came up with this title, Let Me Be the Bridge That Gets You Over Him, at the Full Foot.
Yeah.
And so I kept whittling on it, and to be honest with you, all I had when I went in to write with Jim, I had the last few lines that would become the chorus. It says, can't you see you've cried a river that's impossible to swim? Darling, let me be the bridge to get you over him.
Yeah.
And so I took that in there, and lucky for me, he absolutely loved it.
Wow.
And
that's cool.
Jim was actually writing for Ricky Scott's publishing company at the time, and we really wrote the song for Ricky. He was hot as a firecracker back then, and making great records and selling a lot of records, and just huge, huge back then in the country market. Anyway, we finished it and sent it to him. He really did like it. We thought a couple of different records he might record it, but he never did. And but it is a song that I've performed over the years at songwriter shows and bluegrass shows and, uh-huh. and different events. And it's always been popular. One of my favorite stories about the song is Sonny Throckmorton, a great songwriter out of Nashville, who is a Hall of Fame songwriter. And I'm a huge fan of his, obviously, and we've become friends over the years. But he has told me on multiple occasions that he just thought that was the perfect country song. And that was his favorite song that I'd ever been a part of. So I got to thinking about Sonny's comments because I see him about once a year at a festival we play down in Florida. And he's always yelling that, play that bridge song. And so, I thought, maybe it's time to finally get that thing out there. And that was the first single off the album.
Yeah.
And it started not only a great long-term writing relationship for me and Jim Washington, but it also, we've been... We talk 2 or 3 times a week, even now. Jim's 78 years old.
Wow.
And we still write occasionally, but more importantly, we're just really close friends. So it's been a really special song to me in a lot of ways.
How is it that it got passed over for so long, and that you even on your some of your first solo records that you didn't actually get it recorded?
Yeah. Well, that's a great question. I don't really know why I didn't do it before. Now, I guess I kept thinking somebody would. I kept thinking, to be honest with you, I kept thinking that initially I thought, well, if Ricky doesn't do it, somebody in the music's going to do it. Even if it's an older artist like a Gene Watson or somebody.
Right.
And I kept waiting for somebody like that to record it, and it never did. And then I started thinking and praying that maybe. And don't get me wrong, there's a lot of great country music out there to go.
Oh, sure,
It's a little bit more progressive than what I, tend to write from Earl Haggard and George Jones, so.
Right.
So I guess the last 2 years, I've just been hoping and praying that the industry turns back a little bit more traditional and I would have a shot with it, but I just got to the point. Again, I think it's that getting to be my age and thinking, well, I better go ahead and do it because nobody may be there.
Right. Yeah, I know. Do you think the industry, of bluegrass specifically, but the music industry in general, do you feel like it's going to bounce back? Do you think that we'll get back to some version of being able to, you guys getting to play and the audience getting to enjoy it?
Yeah. Well, I certainly hope so. It's interesting you say that. I literally have my first gig this coming Sunday.
Wow.
It's the first year I've had since the last week of February.
Wow.
And I'm playing, I do a lot of gospel things. I've had a lot of fairly large songs in the gospel music market.
Uh-huh.
And so I sing at a lot of churches, and I'm actually singing, this particular church, I go there once a year. They have this little event called Bluegrass Bash, and they had canceled every one they've had this summer except for this, and this would be the only one they have all year.
Wow.
So I'm that gives me a little bit of encouragement that I get to go play for those folks. I don't know. That's a great question. It's killing all of us.
Yeah.
It really is. So I don't know. I better answer to that. All I can do is pray that we get some kind of a, sure. a vaccine or some kind of a, you know, the good news is, even though this case is going up, that the good news is there's fewer and fewer and fewer people that are really dying at this point when you take it as a whole.
Right.
So I'm just hoping that, and I have several friends who have had it, and, you know, didn't have to go to the doctor, the hospital, whatever. They went and got a test. Of course, that's how they knew they had it. But, you know, I don't know. I just think we're a very strong country. We're strong people, and I know we're going to get through it. But as far as when, not to anybody's, anybody's answer, that question, I guess.
Sure. Well, the fans are just as anxious as the artists. I can tell
yes,
that.
Sir.
So,
yes, sir. I do think when we get back, it's gonna, at least initially, we're going to have some really great sales and some great responses to some of these festivals and stuff that I think they'll be popped out once we get back.
Oh, I think you're right. I'm looking forward to those days for sure.
Yes, sir. Me too.
Did you have any inkling in the early 80s when you got to Nashville that you'd be able to have so many songs recorded by other folks and have the kind of career that you had?
Well, no, but I will tell you, I know this sounds really weird, but I grew up, my dad taught me my first guitar when I was 6, and by the time I was 10, I was on stage, and I always had this feeling, I mean, growing up in Southern Ohio, we would always listen to Grand Ole Opry and then the Midnight Jamboree after that on Saturday night. And I had read a book when I was in high school called The Power of Positive Thinking.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it was written by Norman Vincent Peale, a great author and preacher. Yeah. And I actually got to go see Norman Vincent Peale speak and meet him personally at an event in Columbus, Ohio when I was
cool.
a young man.
Yeah.
And it was one of those things, you know, when you meet certain people or you hear a certain message and it just kind of changes your life or it makes you look at things. And so I was determined to go. I mean, no, I had no idea I would be as blessed as I am. So I'll get that out of the way. I had no idea. However, I did have a feeling in my gut that if I worked hard and didn't give up, that I might have a chance to at least make a living in the music business.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I moved there fairly right out of college. I mean, I was there within 8 weeks of graduating college. I moved straight there. And I got a job at a little place called Opryland USA, which is a theme park in Nashville where we would get to do shows. And that's really where I made my initial contact.
Okay.
My initial show, I was in the same class with Marty Rowe, who became the lead singer for Diamond Rio. Skip Ewing was in that class with me, the Christian comedian, Shonda Pierce. Almost everybody in that show went on to make some kind of living in the music business. Stephen Curtis Chapman, he was just Steve Chapman, but we were fighting strikes together in that show, and we wrote two of his very first big hit while we were working there. So, it's just been an incredible ride. I am a hard worker, I will say that, and I believe that somebody tells me no, it makes me twice as determined to prove them wrong. So, but I have been blessed more than I deserve. I can tell you that.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. And it's an encouraging story, and I appreciate you sharing that part of it, because I think, especially today, people need to hear that. They need to be encouraged, and there's not a we need more hope than ever, for sure.
Yes, sir. In that particular book, The Power of Positive Thinking, it says to envision, see yourself in a certain spot. And I remember after reading the book and meeting him that I was listening one night to the Midnight Jamboree and the Grand Ole Opry, and I just kind of, you know, I'd been to the Opry once when I was about 7 or 8, and my dad took us down there, and it was at the Ryman, but, so that's really all I knew as far as anything visual, but I just started seeing myself there. I know that sounds really, really weird, but I just kind of,
Yeah.
I don't know. It's crazy.
It doesn't sound weird to me. You're right. It probably sounds weird to some people. I've read that book too, and I really several times, and I really appreciate the text and his faith and how that book has encouraged so many other people. So that's so cool.
Sir.
So the new record is Bridges and Back Roads, and I think it's out, right? It came out late July.
Yes, sir. It came on July 31st. The first single, Let Me Be the Bridge, actually was released in May. And that had been out about 8 or 9 weeks, I guess, before the album came out. But yes, sir, it's available now. And I've just been overwhelmed with the response from radio and also from our pre-orders. I've had more pre-orders this time than any record I've ever done.
Wow.
And that could be a symptom not a symptom, but it could be a response to the fact that, you know, we're not out playing. You know?
Sure, yeah. And people can get it from you, your website, or what's the best place to reach out to get in touch with you?
Well, if they want a physical copy, and if they would love to have an autographed copy, please put that in the note that you'd like to have it autographed. But I will say this, my friend Jim Chapman did all the artwork, and I'm just really excited about it. I'm about as excited about the way it looks as I did.
It is. It's a pretty cover, yeah.
Thank you. But they could go to my website for a physical copy at www.jerrysally.com. And that's JerrySally.com. And we will make sure that there's a store there. Just go to the shop. Click on shop, and we'll take you straight to the new CD, and we would love to get one out to you. But it's also available on iTunes. Certainly available on all your streaming services if you want to, if you're already a member of Pandora, Apple, Spotify, all that stuff, it's available. So if you want to go on there and check it out and decide you want a physical copy, we'd love to have you reach out to us and we'll get you one.
Very good. Thank you so much, Jerry. I appreciate your time and taking your time out of your morning today and talk with us, and we wish you the best with the record. And I'm glad you have a show this weekend, and we look forward to seeing you out on the road with everybody else here soon.
Well, thank you, Greg, and I appreciate you. I appreciate your time. You know, I can't do what I do without folks like you. And you don't know how much we appreciate you and Marathon Rhythm and the whole team there. We just appreciate y'all so much, and thank you for your time.
Thanks again for tuning in to this episode of Americana Music Profiles. Find us on iTunes at Americana Music Profiles and on the internet at AmericanaRhythm.com.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune in to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.